share of the budget.
Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Catholic News. My name is Chris Mihalik. The source of our program is DenverCatholic.org. What's Valentine's Day like when you're married to Jesus? By Andre Escalera Jr. You may not know it, but making her way through Denver is a bride of Christ. Sinead Selesky goes about her day much like many of us, making time for work, prayer, friends, and family. But she does so mystically, united with Jesus as his bride. As the rest of us plan and execute the perfect Valentine's Day for our beloveds, she turns to her husband, the Lord Jesus, planning to spend time with him and in service to his people, a dual reality at the heart of her call. A consecrated virgin in the Archdiocese of Denver, Selesky was set apart through a special ceremony, much like a wedding, on June 12, 2021, the Feast of the Immaculate Heart of Mary that year. Unique from other religious professions, her consecration brought her into a profound, even mysterious union with Christ through the Holy Spirit. The heart of my vocation is being a virgin bride of Christ, a spouse of Christ, Selesky said. The opportunity is really an exterior virginity to safeguard an interior virginity, which is really to say an undivided love for the Lord. He calls women into this vocation to bear witness to the reality of his love in the midst of ordinary circumstances of life as an eschatological sign of the life that we will all be living in heaven someday. Living now what each of us will live in heaven, Selesky foreshadows the profound unity God desires to have with his people. As a bride of Christ, she represents her husband in a mystical way wherever she goes. The representation can be tough for many to understand. How can someone be married to Jesus, especially since Selesky looks, sounds, and makes her way about the world like many of us? It's easy to confuse her for a single woman. But it's a hill, she says, she'll continue to die on. She is not a single woman. She's married to the Lord of Lords, Jesus Christ. Put simply, Selesky said, we become his brides and give him our undivided love and bear witness to that in the world as we have deeper, greater freedom to serve his people so we can get them into heaven as well. Being married to the King of Kings might mean no fancy dinner reservations, bouquets of flowers, or boxes of chocolate, but Selesky isn't batting an eye. One of the gifts of this vocation, the real ministry, the office that's been entrusted to me, is prayer, she shared. Every consecrated virgin with the personal gifts and charisms she's been given by the Lord is serving Christ and the Church in those ways. At the heart of the vocation, there's a moment in the consecration where the bishop gives us the liturgy of the hours, and we become an icon of the praying Church. That really is the office. Called to love God first and foremost, especially as his bride, Selesky embodies the virtue of charity, that is, intimacy with the Trinity, by being a contemplative presence in the world. The consecrated virgin fleshes out or concretizes in the midst of the world this indwelling of the Trinity, and God willing, we're all bearing witness and letting that light radiate from us, the light that is Christ, our spouse. So practically speaking, what does that mean? It's being able to be the praying Church and to be virgin bride and mother first to God, and then out of that love that we love because he first loved us, I'm called to love the people of God because his love for me overwhelms and then diffuses, Selesky explained, pointing to the Apostle St. John's famous words in his first letter, John Chapter 4, verse 19. It's so humbling and overwhelming, she continued, beginning to choke up with emotion. The reality of being chosen by him way back when and now and every day for the rest of eternity. There are no words to articulate that. I realize he's always been there. And St. Agnes has a great line where she says, Christ is my love's choice. And that's true for me, but it's because of the overwhelming reality that he chose me first. He chose me. He saved me. He redeemed me. He provides for me. He adorns me. Sweeter than the finest Valentine's Day chocolates, Zaleski's union with Christ is an icon of the church, makes real God's profound love for his people. Over the years, she's lived that love by ministering in several Denver apostolates, like Christ in the City, Catholic Charities of Denver, Marisol Health, and now St. John Paul, the great high school in Denver. Even as we celebrate Valentine's Day, she is learning how better to love and serve students with disabilities with the FIRE Foundation of Denver. At the core of her service, though, is a profound love for Christ. His people are my people, she said matter-of-factly and with a smile. I'm so privileged to have all of these apostolates ways of outpouring to others. I think it speaks to the maternity of my vocation, where Christ is my spouse and his people are my people now. He entrusts me to. Love is diffusive. It desires to give itself. Love overflows and generates. And it's really neat the way he does that in obvious ways and in this hidden work of prayer that he's also given to me, she continued. As we reflect on love, human and divine, this Valentine's Day, Zaleski had a simple exhortation to take to heart on this day dedicated to heartfelt matters. Return to the first love. We get distracted by really silly things. And we also get distracted by really noble things. But all of it should come from an encounter with Jesus first. And so to myself first and to whoever else reads this, remember that he's with us, that he desires to be with us, and that he's always waiting for us. And so on this day where we celebrate love, remember that he loves us first, not just loved us first. She said, emphasizing God's incredible love for us in the present moment. Jesus cares about the reality of our lives, the desires, sorrows, joys, and uncertainty, all of it. He is Emmanuel, and he cares about all of us, simply desiring to be with each of us, she continued. So often we think that we have to be something or someone for him. All he wants is for us to give him permission to encounter us and to love us. So let him. What a first love to return to. So return there. Practically return to the moment of your conversion. Remember and repeat those graces and ask him to make all things new in your heart, because there really is always more with the Lord. Drawing inspiration from the Blessed Virgin Mary, who herself lived a consecrated virginity and a profound closeness to Christ as his mother, Zaleski finds herself continually encouraged to grow in hospitality, encountering and receiving Christ's people with love. She's a companion in this life for me. She really does show me what it means to serve and to give and to love and encounter others. And she points me back to him when I have failed, she said. What does the Catholic Church teach about labor unions and strikes? By Andre Escalera Jr. As the King Superstrike heads into its second of 2 weeks, Catholic Christians might begin to wonder, what does the Church teach about labor unions and strikes? Without commenting on the specifics of this particular labor strike, there is much to learn from Catholic social teaching about economic activity, social justice, and the rights of workers. The dignity of work. Created in the image and likeness of God, man is the pinnacle of creation. Just as God labored to create the universe and everything within it, mankind is called to co-labor with the Creator to bring about God's plan for mankind. Our work, when offered to God in humility, can be sanctifying for us and enriching for those around us. Jesus Christ, the perfect man who serves as a perfect model for our own lives, shows us the dignity of work in his own life. Gaudium et Spes, the Second Vatican Council's pastoral constitution on the church in the modern world, teaches Indeed, we hold that through labor offered to God, man is associated with the redemptive work of Jesus Christ, conferred an eminent dignity on labor when at Nazareth he worked with his own hands. Work, properly ordered, is a good thing. It honors the Creator's gifts and the talents received from him. Work can be a means of sanctification and a way of animating earthly realities with the Spirit of Christ. In short, the Catechism of the Catholic Church quips, summarizing Pope St. John Paul II's teaching in Laborum Exercens 6, work is for man, not man for work. Economic conflict, the right to organize and employers of the business. The Catechism quickly turns from the dignity of work to the recognition that economic conflicts often arise between different interests, often opposed to one another, and calls on those different interests to work together through meaningful dialogue to reduce these conflicts through negotiation that respects the rights and duties of each social partner, those responsible for business enterprises, representatives of wage earners, for example, trade unions, and public authorities when appropriate. Though only a footnote in the Catechism, labor unions are seen as an indispensable element of social life in the compendium of the social doctrine of the Church. They are called to represent their members well, protecting their rights and working for the common good, avoiding a struggle against perceived enemies or one to seek greater power. Reminiscent of Jesus' words in the Gospel of Luke, much will be required of the person entrusted with much, and still more will be demanded of the person entrusted with more. The Catechism explains that much is required of those responsible for business enterprises, listing three obligations. Number one, they are responsible to society for the economic and ecological effects of their operations. Two, they have an obligation to consider the good of persons and not only the increase of profits, and to provide a just wage. Noting the necessity of profits for future economic development and employment guarantees, the Catechism strongly emphasizes the worker's right to a just wage, teaching, a just wage is the legitimate fruit of work. To refuse or withhold it can be a grave injustice. Determining a just wage involves more than a simple Google search to see what fair market value might be. It involves balancing both the needs of the and the contributions of each person, allowing them for them to provide for their family and moral considerations. Just because someone might agree to a lower than just wage does not make it morally acceptable, the Catechism emphatically states. Right to strike. Amid labor and economic disputes, workers have morally legitimate recourse to strike as long as, one, every other method for the resolution of disputes has been ineffectual. Two, it is necessary to obtain a proportionate benefit. Three, it is peaceful. Four, its objectives are directly related to working conditions. And five, and its goals are aligned with the common good. As an important caveat, Pope St. John Paul II adds in Laborum Exercens, it must never be forgotten that when essential community services are in question, they must in every case be ensured, if necessary, by means of appropriate legislation. When all of these conditions are met, the saintly Pope continues, this method is recognized by Catholic social teaching as legitimate in the proper conditions and within just limits. In this connection, workers should be assured the right to strike without being subjected to personal penal sanctions for taking part in a strike. While workers have the right to strike, the last-ditch effort should not be abused, for abuse of the strike weapons can lead to the paralysis of the whole socioeconomic life, and this is contrary to the requirements of the common good of society, which also corresponds to the properly understood nature of work itself. Because of the disruption inherent to a strike, other options should be exhausted before striking, and proportionate benefit should be considered if the strike is accompanied by violence or is meant to achieve goals not directly linked to working conditions or ones contrary to the common good, it becomes morally unacceptable. Pope Francis to U.S. bishops amid mass deportations. Dignity of Migrants Comes First, by Hannah Brockhaus from the Catholic News Agency. Pope Francis addressed the bishops of the United States on Tuesday about the country's ongoing mass deportation of unauthorized immigrants, urging Catholics to consider the justness of laws and policies in light of the dignity and rights of people. In a letter published February 11th, the Pope, while supporting a nation's right to defend itself from people who have committed violent or serious crimes, said a rightly formed conscience would disagree with associating the illegal status of some migrants with criminality. The act of deporting people who in many cases have left their own land for reasons of extreme poverty, insecurity, exploitation, persecution, or serious deteriorations of the environmental damages of the dignity of many men and women and of entire families, and places them in a state of particular vulnerability and defenselessness, he said. All the Christian faithful and people of goodwill, the pontiff continued, are called upon to consider the legitimacy of norms and public policies in the light of the dignity of the person and his or her fundamental rights, not vice versa. Respectful of the dignity of all, Pope Francis penned the letter to U.S. bishops amid changes to U.S. immigration policy under President Donald Trump's administration, including the increased deportation of migrants, which numerous bishops have criticized. The Pope's letter recognized the valuable efforts of the U.S. bishops in their work with migrants and refugees and invoked God's reward for their protection and defense of those who are considered less valuable, less important, or less human. Asking Our Lady of Guadalupe to protect all those living in fear or pain due to immigration and deportation, he prayed for a society that is more fraternal, inclusive, and respectful of the dignity of all, and exhorted Catholics and other people of goodwill not to give in to narratives that discriminate against and cause unnecessary suffering to our migrant and refugee brothers and sisters. Francis emphasized that immigration laws and policies should be subordinated to the dignified treatment of people, especially the most vulnerable. This is not a minor issue. An authentic rule of law is verified precisely in a dignified treatment that all people deserve, especially the poorest and most marginalized, he underlined. The true common good is promoted when society and government, with creativity and the strict respect for the rights of all, as I have affirmed on numerous occasions, welcomes, protects, promotes, and integrates the most fragile, unprotected, and vulnerable. He said the just treatment of immigrants does not impede the development of policies to regulate orderly and legal migration, but what is built on the basis of force and not on the truth about the equal dignity of every human being begins badly and will end badly. The Ordo Amoris. In his letter, Pope Francis also weighed in on the Catholic concept of Ordo Amoris, rightly ordered love, which was secretly invoked by Vice President J.D. Vance in the ongoing debate over the immigration policy. Christian love, the Pope wrote, is not a concentric expansion of interest that little by little extends to other persons and groups. In other words, the human person is not a mere individual, relatively expansive, with some philanthropic feelings. The human person is a subject with dignity who, through the constitutive relationship with all, especially with the poorest, can gradually mature in his identity and vocation, he continued. The true Ordo Amoris that must be promoted, the pontiff wrote, is that which we discover by meditating constantly on the parable of the Good Samaritan, That is, by meditating on the love that builds a fraternity open to all without exception. Jesus the refugee, the Son of God, in becoming man, also chose to live the drama of immigration, the Pope wrote. Francis pointed out the social doctrine of the Church that even Jesus Christ experienced the difficulty of leaving his own land because of a risk to his life and of taking refuge in a foreign society and culture. Calling it the Magna Carta of the Church's thinking on migration, Francis cited a passage from Pope Pius XII's Apostolic Constitution on the Care of Migrants, Exul Familia Nazarethana, which says, "The family of Nazareth in exile, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, immigrants in Egypt and refugees there to escape the wrath of an ungodly king, are the model, the example, and the consolation of immigrants and pilgrims of every age and country, of all refugees of every condition who, beset by persecution or necessity, are forced to leave their homeland, beloved family, and dear friends for foreign lands." Likewise, Pope Francis commented, "Jesus Christ, loving everyone with a universal love, educates us in a permanent recognition of the dignity of every human being, without exception." Converts clap back at CNN priest's anti-Catholic dismissal of J.D. Vance. Converts and other Catholics took issue with the celebrity priest's perceived dismissal of Vance's views based on the vice president's relative newness to Catholicism. Converts to Catholicism are clapping back after a priest made televised remarks dismissing J.D. Vance's theological views because the vice president has been Catholic only for 6 years. Responding to comments made by Passionist Father Edward Beck on CNN on February 12th, several Catholic converts, including academics, priests, and journalists, took to social media to express their disdain for what they saw as a broader disparagement of those who enter the Church as adults. The tone he uses in talking of V.P. Vance as a convert is the reveal here, said Carl Olson, editor of Catholic World Report. "The hatred of converts, which I've seen and experienced far too much of, is not only bizarre, it is anti-Catholic." Father Beck, a regular CNN contributor known for his liberal views, was speaking during a panel discussion about Vance's comments about the Ordo Amoris, a theological concept developed by St. Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas. Vance has cited the concept, which proposes an ordered hierarchy of one's loves, as a justification for the Trump administration's America First immigration policies. The vice president's January 30th comment kicked off a still brewing theological debate that even Pope Francis weighed in his February 11th letter to the U.S. bishops. Father Beck provided his own interpretation of Pope Francis's characterization of the true Ordo Amoris, which emphasized universal love and has been widely seen as a rebuttal of the vice president's use of the concept. The Pope says, "No, Mr. Vance, you who are a Catholic only for 6 years, I'm a Catholic for 88 years as being Pope," said Father Beck. "He's a convert to Catholicism. That's not what Augustine meant. Augustine meant the paradigm of the Good Samaritan." Father Dwight Longnecker, a convert and longtime Catholic priest of the Diocese of Charleston, South Carolina, playfully asked whether it would be okay for him to speak publicly about Catholicism. "I've been a Catholic for 30 years. When exactly am I allowed to express an opinion?" Although he did not explicitly dismiss Vance's theological views based on being a convert, progressive Catholic journalist Michael Sean Winters described Vance's understanding of the Ordo Amoris as sophomoric before poking at a different element of Vance's biography to dismiss him. Call it hillbilly theology, wrote Winters in a February 13th column, making a reference to both Vance's family roots in Appalachia and the memoir Vance wrote, and earning a rebuke from at least one of his publication's readers. New articles on the Ordo Amoris have continued to be published by Catholic entities almost daily since Vance used the term, some favorable, others critical. And secular media has also started looking into the concept, with the Associated Press even providing an explainer. Thank you for joining us for Catholic News. My name is Chris Mihalik.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.